This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The pivot to different spending. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Monday, November 8th, glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
With the House having approved the infrastructure bill, Democrats will now focus on passing a separate social spending proposal.
Lawsuits filed after the deadly stampede at a Houston concert.
Bomb threats temporarily clear Ivy League campuses.
And big-name companies pledged billions for racial justice last year. So where's the money?
They said, we're going to give $1 million to one group that they've been working with for a while that works on policing and racial justice. But then a year later, they announced an update and they were like, okay, we spent the rest of the money, but they didn't say where all of it went.
Leslie Albrecht at MarketWatch tries to track where Facebook, Amazon, and others spent money for racial justice. In the wake of sluggish approval ratings and Republicans winning in Virginia on Election Day last Tuesday, President Biden has a victory as he prepares to sign a bipartisan infrastructure bill into law after the House passed it Friday night. The Wall Street Journal says the legislation offers him a ready-made platform to promote construction jobs, ribbon cuttings, and union-friendly groundbreakings ahead of next year's midterms.
We did something that's long overdue, that long has been talked about in Washington, but never actually been done.
Critics include Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamak.
This is not a question of true infrastructure. The total price tag of $1.2 trillion, only 6% of it goes to actual infrastructure.
She was on Fox News. Six progressive Democrats opposed the infrastructure bill, but the legislation picked up the support of 13 Republicans, ensuring passage. Mr. Biden is also seeking to complete negotiations with congressional Democrats on a broader, nearly $2 trillion social spending and climate bill. At least three lawsuits have already been filed following a deadly crowd-rushing incident at a Travis Scott concert in Houston Friday night. Eight people were killed and scores of others injured after the crush at the AstroWorld Festival. Officials say the crowd began to push and surge towards the front of the stage, which caused the people in the front to be compressed, unable to escape. As Mr. Scott performed, the situation worsened as concertgoers near the front were trapped, as people were trampled, calls for help were drowned out by the music. Mr. Scott took to his Instagram story to note that he typically tries to take care of people in the crowd when he notices someone in distress.
Anytime I can make out, you know, anything that's going on, I stop a show and, you know, help them get the help they need.
At the same event in 2019, a stampede broke out that left at least three people injured. Also, Fox News says Mr. Scott was reportedly arrested in 2017 for inviting fans to bypass security and rush the stage at a show in Arkansas. A handful of Ivy League college campuses were evacuated briefly following reports of bomb threats days after several Ohio universities received similar threats. Cornell, Columbia, and Brown all issued emergency alerts after receiving bomb threats yesterday afternoon. They each evacuated buildings and cautioned students to stay away from campus. More from this morning's Dave Duncan.
In Ithaca, New York, Cornell police cordoned off the center of campus yesterday after receiving a call that bombs were placed in four buildings. In New York City, Columbia University police issued an emergency alert after receiving bomb threats at about 2:30 p.m. Police ultimately determined there were no credible threats. In New Haven, Connecticut, on Friday, a non-emergency line received a call alerting authorities to a bomb that referenced specific locations around the Yale campus. Gordon?
Thanks, Dave. On Saturday, Ohio University received a similar threat, later deemed not credible. That same day, Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, received another threat. Cleveland State received a bomb threat on Thursday. Dell Technologies' biggest business sale of the year has arrived. Step up your vision with top tech up to 45% off during their early access Black Friday event. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Plus, get incredible savings on Windows 11 PCs, along with servers, monitors, and docks, all with free shipping. There's also special financing with Dell Business Credit. Get started by contacting your Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy narrowly won his race for a second term Wednesday night, to the relief of Democrats stunned by their loss in Virginia. But the narrow margin and a strong Republican surge across the Garden State left them alarmed and wondering what went wrong. In-depth analysis from Tyler Pager, White House correspondent at The Washington Post. Tyler, explain.
Yeah, I think Democrats are relieved that Murphy did pull it out. Obviously, marked change from what happened in Virginia, where Democrats are hoping to win there as well. But I think there's real concern across the Democratic Party about how tight this race was. This is not a state that Democrats thought would be that competitive. Some polls had Murphy up almost by double digits. When I spoke with Murphy aides, they thought that was a little optimistic, but they felt comfortable heading into Election Day that he would pull this out with a lot of breathing room. That's not what happened on Tuesday night. Jack Chiarelli ran a really close and strong race, which surprised them, and I think was part of this larger surprise across the country at how strong Republicans performed on Tuesday night. I think one of the takeaways was it was not that the Democratic base did not turn out. They did. Murphy outperformed his 2017 numbers. It was just that Republican surge, which Democrats were not expecting.
As you said, as they mulled over the election results, some New Jersey Democrats blamed Mr. Biden, some blamed Mr. Murphy, and some blamed both. How come? How so?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always challenging as an incumbent when you're running for re-election. You have a record that voters are going to judge you on, and particularly in New Jersey, one of the things Murphy officials will tell you and brag about is that this is the first time a Democrat has been re-elected since the 70s. And so I think they always knew that this was going to be an uphill battle, but I think there's always there's the power of the incumbency, which helps, but there's also the perils of the incumbency, that you have a record that you have to defend. And I think the national environment right now is not one that's friendly to Democrats. There's concerns about the economy, concerns about COVID. There are concerns about Democratic infighting and lack of progress on Capitol Hill here in Washington. And so I think there's just a lot of swirling things that made this a difficult environment for Democrats.
We're speaking with Tyler Pager, White House reporter at The Washington Post. He's written a piece entitled "Murphy's Narrow Win in New Jersey Does Little to Ease Democratic Anxieties." You got analysis from the former New Jersey Senator Robert Torricelli, who said this wasn't the base, it was the persuadable voters. What did he mean?
Yeah, so as I said earlier, Democrats were really excited about turnout. They felt they had really good turnout as Murphy exceeded his 2017 numbers. But it was the voters who either voted for Biden and Democrats in 2020 who then switched their votes to Republicans. And then it was also this surge of Republicans that they didn't expect to turn out in such strong numbers. And I think that is one of the concerns for Democrats moving toward the midterms, is these independent voters, the voters that swing between Democrat and Republican. And they saw this shift from these voters toward the Republican Party on Tuesday night, and not just in New Jersey, but across the country. And that is a sign of concern for Democrats.
You mentioned, too, the state Senate president in New Jersey, Steve Sweeney, lost to a truck driver who spent less than $200 on his entire campaign.
Yeah, quite an upset there. And most of the money or a significant portion of the less than $200 he spent on Dunkin' Donuts for federal election report. So I think that is a huge upset. Obviously, no one would expect the state Senate president, one of the most powerful Democrats in the state of New Jersey, to go down. But that just shows you the type of environment that Democrats were in this cycle, where the party and the party brand were quite toxic for some voters.
What does this mean nationally, if anything, here, Tyler?
Yeah, I think it just shows the uphill battle that Democrats will have in November in the midterms and holding on to the House and the Senate. The incumbents party historically does terribly in the midterms. Democrats are trying to reverse the trend there, but I think Tuesday's results showed just how perilous these slim majorities are for Democrats in both chambers of Congress, and the work that they have cut out in front of them to really try to make inroads with voters who are turning away from the Democratic Party, whether that's independents going to Republicans or more Republicans turning out to vote. Democrats have a lot of challenges in the next year to try to regroup ahead of the critical midterms.
Thanks, Tyler. Tyler Pager, White House correspondent at The Washington Post. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A federal appeals court has temporarily blocked President Biden's COVID vaccine and testing requirements for private businesses just a day after they had officially gone into effect. The Republican attorneys general of Texas, South Carolina, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Utah, as well as several private companies, filed petitions on Friday challenging the mandate in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The court on Saturday ordered the vaccine and testing requirements halted pending review. The Biden administration has until this evening to respond.
Number two.
The U.S. today lifts pandemic travel restrictions that have barred many international visitors since early last year, measures that have driven down revenue at hotels, retailers, restaurants, and airlines. The reopening of the border to many international visitors comes with a new set of rules, such as vaccination requirements. Airlines expect an immediate surge in travelers. United says it expects 50% more international inbound passengers today than a week ago. Delta expects many of its international flights to be full today.
Number three.
At least two investigations and one civil lawsuit are underway into the deadly stampede during rap star Travis Scott's Astroworld Music Festival that killed at least eight people and injured dozens in Houston. This woman attended Friday night's concert.
I really thought I was going to die there. You can barely breathe while you're standing up. Imagine being down there.
Two of the victims were teenagers aged 14 and 16. Houston police opened a criminal investigation by homicide and narcotics detectives following reports that somebody in the audience had been injecting people with drugs. Several Ivy League schools, including Cornell, Columbia, and Brown, received bomb threats Sunday that prompted evacuations of some facilities. There weren't any reports of explosions or damage, and no credible threats were found. It's an NFL record that's likely to last a long time, maybe forever. Josh Allen sacked Josh Allen. In the second quarter of yesterday's game between the Jaguars and Bills, Jacksonville defensive end Josh Allen sacked Buffalo's quarterback Josh Allen. It was the first time in NFL history a player had sacked a quarterback of the same name. The Jaguars' Allen sacked the Bills' Allen a second time and also recovered a fumble by the Bills' quarterback in the fourth quarter to complete the trifecta.
Oh, my goodness.
You think that'll be broken anytime soon?
I think the announcers only had to say the name Josh Allen for three hours. Thanks, Jen.
Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Monday. The rise of remote work is forcing companies to overhaul the way they measure performance. And the good news is, research shows that the new way of managing is a whole lot better than the old one. It's a story by Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Insider. Aki, what are you hearing?
So I think it depends on the organization. What's really common now is goal setting, where you set goals at the beginning of the year, the beginning of the quarter, and then managers evaluate you based on whether you've met those goals or not. And preferably those goals would be measurable. In other cases, you know, if you're a salesperson, a lot of the time it's, you know, based on how much revenue you bring in, that kind of thing. But, you know, trying to decide what that criteria should be is really hard and really tricky, which I think is one of the reasons why companies have avoided doing this, even though they know that this is a better way of assessing employee performance.
You referenced proximity bias, too, still playing a role. Explain that.
So in the hybrid workplaces that we're probably going to see in the next few years, a lot of companies are allowing employees to choose whether they want to work from home or whether they want to come into the office or if they want to do a mix of both. So there's a lot of concern right now among a lot of HR experts and also academics that this is going to create some kind of two-tier system where, you know, employees who come into the office will will get a leg up over employees who don't come into the office simply because the people who are coming into the office are seeing their managers more. They're more physically visible. And a lot of people are concerned that this will lead to promotion disparities and that kind of thing in the workplace.
We're speaking with Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Insider. She's written a story entitled "Work from Home is Going to Change How You Get Promoted and Why." You referenced a company called Gusto and what they've done. Kind of take us through what they've been up to.
So Gusto is a software company based in San Francisco. I think they have like a little under 2,000 employees now. And before, in their early years, the way that they evaluated employees was to have people write kind of these long, long essays, you know, on everything that they accomplished during the last 6 months. And that's how they were evaluated. But executives started to realize, you know, that that system doesn't really work. And so as they had a more dispersed workforce, they realized they had to come up with something that felt more systematic, more formatted, more fair. And so they started telling employees, like, this is how we think about performance. It could be based on your effort. It could be based on your output. It could be based on the outcomes that you achieve for our customers, or it could be based on the impact you have on our overall business, on the bottom line for the organization.
Thanks, Aki. Aki Ito, senior correspondent at Insider. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon.
Expert insight, world-class reporting. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday, November 8th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Infrastructure is done. Now Democrats are pivoting to expanding the social safety net. Houston officials try to piece together Friday's concert stampede that killed 8. International tourists allowed back into the U.S. today with the lifting of some pandemic restrictions. USA Today poll finds Biden's approval rating at a new low of 38%. Titans over the Rams in Sunday Night Football. College football coaches poll, Georgia, Alabama, Cincinnati, then Oklahoma. And can politicians be paid in Bitcoin? That story in about 20 minutes. U.S. companies last year, you'll recall, pledged to spend billions of dollars to help solve the country's long-standing racial inequities. But more than a year later, it's nearly impossible to know where all that money has gone and exactly who benefited from it. Leslie Albrecht, reporter at MarketWatch, says well-known companies aren't exactly forthcoming for various reasons. Leslie, what have you found?
Basically, remember last year when there were a lot of protests over George Floyd's death? A lot of companies wanted to be seen as doing something about this issue that so many people were concerned about. And so a lot of them made big splashy announcements saying, we're going to devote, you know, $100 million to racial injustice. We took a look at where all that money went and who it was donated to. And the bottom line is that a year later or over a year later, no company has provided a complete public accounting of all the recipients of their pledged money and exact amounts of what each group received. So we don't really know exactly where all the money has gone, and we don't know exactly how much all these companies have spent.
All right. So is that to say that they didn't spend all the money that may have been pledged?
No, that's the interesting thing. So the issue here is that companies are not required to disclose this these donations and this philanthropy that they do when they want to make donations. They don't have to. It's not something that they have to tell the Securities and Exchange Commission or anybody else. So it's up to them to say, here's what we did with the money. And, you know, they send that information out kind of in dribs and drabs and press releases, but getting a real clear picture of it is, for the public, almost impossible.
Wow. So who specifically did what, at least from what you were able to tell?
Yeah, so, for example, our friends over at Facebook, they've been in the news a lot. They said that they were going to commit $1.1 billion to racial injustice, okay? And that included, for example, they were going to give $25 million to black content creators, and they were also going to give a bunch of money to 10,000 black-owned businesses. But they ultimately said that they couldn't share publicly the names of those content creators or the names of those businesses because they didn't want to violate their privacy. So we don't really know who got that money and what with it, and it made a difference on this issue.
Mm. We're speaking with Leslie Albrecht, reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called Facebook, Amazon, Google, and Others Pledged Billions for Racial Justice in 2020. Tracking where all the money went is almost impossible. What'd you find on Amazon?
Yeah, so Amazon was actually like one of the more transparent, sort of. They donated $27 million. That was between the company and employee donations. And they gave it to 12 nonprofits. But they wouldn't say how much each nonprofit got. That could mean like one group got $26 million and everybody else had to split $1 million. We just don't know. And they said that they couldn't share that information. MarketWatch asked them for comment, but they wouldn't share it.
Well, how about the likes of Google?
They said in June of 2020 that they were going to donate $12 million, and they said, we're going to give $1 million to one group that they've been working with for a while that works on policing and racial justice. But then a year later, they announced an update, and they were like, okay, we spent the rest of the money, but they didn't say where all of it went.
Wow. There was somebody you quoted in your story, I think it was an economist, who said he wants to know specifically how much of the money actually made it to black people. What did he mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, this guy is a black economist, and he studies different issues in the black community, and he said his argument was companies are doing this to enhance shareholder value because they know that this helps with employee retention. Okay, he's talking about how younger employees, especially millennials, are very interested in working at companies that are involved in social justice issues. So for companies to make these pledges, it helps them attract employees. His point, though, is that they should have to publicly disclose this stuff to the SEC so we know where all this money went, so we know exactly whether or not it really is helping folks or not. You know, I mean, they can say that they're sending out this money, but we don't really know if it's making a difference unless they tell us exactly where it went.
Thanks, Leslie. Leslie Albrecht, reporter at MarketWatch. Coming up next, when your attitude is so positive, you're annoying. Holiday parties are back, making it the perfect time to do a reset and upgrade your look. The Black Friday event from Indochino offers their lowest prices of the year on suits, shirts, outerwear, and more. Even lower if you use the code Gordon at Indochino.com. You can go to a showroom or measure yourself online at Indochino.com. That's what I did. The chinos I customized are the best fitting pair of pants I've ever worn, a feeling you cannot get with pants off the rack. Indochino suits start at just $299. Shirts start at $45 with all customizations included. Get away from your video call style and back into looking and feeling amazing. Indochino's Black Friday event runs from November 8th to the 29th. Save even more and get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more by using promo code Gordon at Indochino.com. That's $50 off a purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com. Indochino.com. Promo code Gordon. Again, Indochino.com, promo code Gordon.
Thanks for joining us. This portion of the program is brought to you by Indeed. Need to hire great candidates? You need Indeed, the all-in-one platform for interviewing, screening, and hiring high-quality people. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Pushing away difficult emotions such as sadness or fear and forcing ourselves or others to be positive can be harmful to our mental well-being and our relationships. Psychologists say this is because practicing false cheerfulness, which they call toxic positivity, keeps us from addressing our feelings and the feelings of others. Insight from Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, what's this about?
We are taught to be positive as kids. We're always told, like, pick yourself up, you know, get back on your bike, you know, keep going. You know, an attitude is going to get you everywhere. And certainly being positive is a great coping skill. However, you can take it too far. And when you force yourself to be positive when you really are not, when the situation does not warrant it, and if you force others to be positive when the situation doesn't warrant it for them, you're really going to run into some problems with your own mood, with depression, and some problems in your relationship.
Right out of the gate, you go into an anecdote about where this is applicable. Explain that.
So I talked to this father who's really interesting, and he said he's always been positive his whole life. He's the kind of guy that jumps out of bed and skips off to work. He's been like that forever. He has a daughter. She's in her early 30s, and she called him, and she says, you know, my dad's always been positive. But during the very beginning part of the pandemic, she's bought an apartment with her husband in Brooklyn in New York City, and she calls her dad, and she's panicked. You know, the city, she has just closed on this apartment, and it's expensive, and now the city is closing down, and people, her friends are leaving, real estate prices are dropping, this is unprecedented, and she's panicking, and she just wants to talk to her dad, and her dad gives her a big pep talk. He said, oh, don't even worry, it's going to be great, the pandemic's going to be over, and he just keeps going. And when he gets off the phone later, he feels great. He thinks he gave her all these positive thoughts. He says, I literally felt like Batman saving the world. And then his wife pops up, and she's sitting there, and she says, she's sitting next to him, and she says, look, that is the most annoying conversation I've ever heard. Your daughter just wanted to talk to you. Uh-oh. She wanted to talk to her father. You did not listen. And that is exactly what positivity gets you. You're not listening.
Speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. She's written a piece about toxic positivity. So there's a kind of a breakout or a subheadline in your piece that talks about stifling emotions. Did he do that to her in this case? Did he stifle her emotions?
Yes, and I think when you do this to other people, you're really, the key is that you're not listening to them. You're making them stifle their emotions, but you're making them stifle their communication with you. When someone comes to you with a problem that seems unsolvable, they're often looking for support in the form of just listening, saying, yes, I get it. This is bad. And we're all guilty of this toxic positivity. You can think of how many times people who are very sick, people with cancer, are told, well, stay positive. That's going to affect how your outcome is. Like, you're not allowed to feel bad if you have a very bad disease. You know, people, we tell this to kids, again, all the time. Like, cheer up. Don't worry. Try to have this better attitude. And we do it to ourselves. When we do it to ourselves, that's when we're really stifling our emotion. If you don't deal with an emotion, we know this. Neuroscientists know this. It's going to pop back up and get you.
How do we do better then?
You know, so the first thing we want to do is we want to accept our emotions. Like, so we just want to stop and think about, you know, what is our reality? One important thing is hope and optimism. Those are different from toxic positivity. Again, toxic positivity is forced positivity. It's a denial of reality. Hope and optimism look at reality and think, look, here's what I hope for given this situation.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. So the year plus of remote meetings is ending, right? Time to get back to the office. So about that beard. If you've realized the scruffy look that worked on a webcam isn't fitting the all-business look you're trying to get back to, don't worry. Harry's can help. Harry's crafts high-quality, long-lasting blades and durable, weighted handles that make a close, comfortable shave quick and, believe it or not, enjoyable. And refill blades start as low as $2. New customers can get started with Harry's with a starter set, a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover, usually $13 for just $3. The starter set and the incredibly close shave convinced me right away to switch to Harry's. I've been using Harry's for years. I think you'll love it too. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/deal to get their starter set for just $3. 100% satisfaction guaranteed, so you've got nothing to lose. harrys.com/deal to get the special offer. HARRYS. harrys.com/deal. Thanks for spending time with us. Don't forget, by the way, you can find us on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, @ This Morning Show.
And you can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. 9 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The U.S. lifts restrictions today on travel from a long list of countries, including Mexico, Canada, and most of Europe, allowing tourists to make long-delayed trips and family members to reconnect with loved ones after more than a year and a half apart because of the pandemic. Starting today, the U.S. is accepting fully vaccinated travelers at airports and land borders, doing away with a COVID restriction that dates back to the Trump administration.
Number two.
The House passed a key procedural vote early Saturday morning to line up eventual passage of the Build Back Better Act, President Biden's signature social safety net and climate change bill. The party line vote came soon after the House late Friday night passed the $1 trillion Senate-approved bipartisan infrastructure bill, which will now go to Biden's desk. Biden lauded the passage of the infrastructure plan and successful procedural vote for his social and climate plan.
The Build Back Better bill, which we're going to be working on now, and this bill are all designed to give ordinary people a fighting chance.
Number three.
Los Angeles is among the growing number of cities, including San Francisco and New York City, requiring people show proof of vaccination to enter various types of businesses and venues. Rules in the nation's second most populous city, called Safe Pass LA, apply to more types of businesses and other indoor locations, including museums and convention centers. They're being implemented starting today as new cases have started inching up following a sharp decline from an August peak driven by the Delta variant. The Supreme Court is preparing to hear a case about the government's ability to get lawsuits thrown out of court by claiming they would reveal secrets that threaten national security. The case before the High Court today involves a group of Muslim men from Southern California. They filed a class action lawsuit claiming that the FBI spied on them and hundreds of others in a surveillance operation following 9/11. A 9-foot-tall video game joystick made of wood, rubber, and steel has made it into the Guinness World Records as the largest. A Dartmouth College professor created the giant controller in 2006 to celebrate her childhood experience of maniacally playing Atari video games. The giant joystick has toured the U.S., U.K., and Spain.
It was like a red button to shoot and a joystick to move, and that was it.
He didn't need a 9-foot one.
Oh, my goodness. You look like an Xbox controller today. There's 10 different buttons.
Right,
you
got
to hit
right.
Six at once to be successful. Forget it. Thanks, Jen. Dell Technologies' biggest business sale of the year has arrived. Step up your vision with top tech up to 45% off during their Early Access Black Friday event.
Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Plus, get incredible savings on Windows 11 PCs, along with servers, monitors, and docks, all with free shipping. There's also special financing with Dell Business Credit. Get started by contacting your Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for joining us. New York City's incoming mayor doesn't want his first paychecks in dollars. He wants Bitcoin. Mayor-elect Eric Adams tweeted late last week that he's going to take his first three paychecks on the new job in Bitcoin, claiming New York will be the center of the cryptocurrency industry. The statement is the latest episode in friendly competition between Mr. Adams and Miami's freshly re-elected mayor, Francis Suarez, who earlier last week said he's taking his next paycheck in Bitcoin. The shifting outlook on cryptocurrency appears to be spreading. Earlier this year, Scott Conger, the mayor of Jackson, Tennessee, said the city was exploring cryptocurrency payroll conversions for its employees. But Money.com says given the constraints in municipal government, these mayors will not actually be receiving their paychecks in Bitcoin at this time. They will most likely have to convert their take-home pay into Bitcoin. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.